You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and joining me today is Brian Casey, who is on the team over at Impact, which is an inbound marketing agency. And I'm going to ask Brian to talk a little bit about what inbound marketing is, because I know some of you folks out there are new to some of this marketing jargon, and we want to make sure that we're as thorough as possible. When I clicked over to read up on Brian and I saw him on LinkedIn, this great photo popped up, and it's a team. And I said, "What sport is that?" And Brian jumped in and said, "Well, I actually, not only am I a coach, I'm a former professional ultimate frisbee player." So, Brian, I'm so curious about that.
Yeah, it's a weird niche sport. It's kind of like soccer meets frisbee. Mm-hmm. Meets football. So there's end zones. You get to score in an end zone. There are kickoffs. There's offense and defense. It's a pretty strategic sport, which is great for me because I'm 34 and coming off of the prime of my athleticism.
Excellent. Well, I love that. And I love that you're continuing as a coach in that space as well. So that it's still a part of you. But we're not here to talk about ultimate frisbee, are we? We're going to be talking about inbound marketing and your area of specialty, which is content marketing. And I wonder if you can help us out with definitions of each of those things.
Yeah, so it's a great question because often content marketing and inbound marketing are somewhat confused in terms of how they're viewed. But inbound marketing is the general philosophy that you want to be a resource, a information hub for people that will then seek you out as a service or product provider as a result of the content that you've created, versus an outbound approach where you are on the phone trying to track people down, trying to be very proactive with how you're reaching out to customers. It's more of an approach of people coming to you and creating a website and content that really invite people to want to work with you.
And, you know, so I've heard push versus pull as another way of talking about this, and yep. You're at the pull end of the spectrum. We think in terms of marketing a lot about the internet these days. And so, you know, when I hear people talking about content, they're talking about things that are being done online. Can you sort of list some of those examples of what online content might include?
Yeah. So, I mean, the basic one that everybody is going to know and understand is your website. Your website is the primary outlet where someone is going to do research on you. On your website, you might have blog articles, you might have videos, you might have downloadable resources that all have content in them. And all of those are just outlets to inform your primary audience or your ideal audience so that they're interested in working with you.
And, you know, I said, you know, now we think about online, but content marketing is nothing new. It didn't get invented with the internet, right? So there was content marketing long before. And I was thinking about before we jumped on to record some examples of, you know, historically, before we even had computers, you know, how did content marketing exist in life? And I remember growing up and going to the grocery store, and at the checkout stand, you know, there might be like a little book of recipes that was produced by, you know, some company that had an ingredient that was central to every one of those recipes, for example.
Sure.
So this is nothing new. And in fact, that offline version of content marketing, that still exists, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I see this in a bunch of different places. And that example I just gave, you know, I'm Jewish, and every Passover, when you go to the grocery store, at least in highly dense Jewish, you know, neighborhoods, you get a Passover Haggadah that's published by Maxwell House, right? That's like a great tool. And so everybody in that audience always associates Maxwell House with you know, that holiday. But we see this even, you know, with like people just publishing books. That's content too.
Sure.
Right. You have a great example of that, in fact, don't you?
Yeah. So Marcus Sheridan, who's one of the partners at Impact, wrote a book, The Ask You Answer. If you search for content, best content marketing books, it's on all of the top 10 lists. And he's essentially created a framework for how to create content that's going to attract customers to you. And that's the entire philosophy that my company is built on, is teaching people how to implement that strategy.
Now, what's inside that book is key, I think, to what makes for good content versus or effective content versus ineffective content. Do you mind diving into sort of that philosophy a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that I take away from that, from books like Building a Story Brand, all of these marketing books, is that there is an element that you can take and go and do something with. They're not just general books that are some of the early marketing books that I read that are about how to lay out a store or things that weren't directly applicable to me. But these are broad concepts that can be used in any business. And there are things that you can actually go and take and do on your own right away that can make an impact.
In terms of what that book teaches, and I assume what the philosophy is that you share with your clients, coaching them through how to build out marketing strategically, some content is going to be effective at building the next, you know, moving somebody to the next step in the relationship with the business. A lot of content out there probably isn't. And I wonder if you could help us understand what makes for effective versus ineffective content.
I think a lot of time when people think of marketing content, especially if you're in a sales role, you think about fluffy content, content that's published to inform people of what you're doing with your business, or that a new hire has been made, or that you have a company Christmas party coming up. Things that don't actually have any bearing for anybody who's interested in doing business with you. So The Ask You Answer is about a big five, which is five different topics that you can write on that your audience is going to be interested in, such as cost or comparisons, the best X number of providers for the service that you provide. It's five different kind of categories that you can write within. And we have done the research. We've worked with hundreds of clients to know that over time, these are the types of topics that tend to work really well in generating revenue.
So let's just sort of walk through the scenario of how, let's say we're, you know, B2C, a consumer is looking for an answer to a question they have, sort of what role content plays in that process, and when it's set up properly, how it helps the business to move that person forward. What are the mechanisms involved?
Yeah, so most situations nowadays, someone's going to search something online. And it's going to be something that could be at any stage of their journey as a potential buyer. It could be early, it could be late. If you have a well thought out content strategy, you're going to have content that speaks to people at every stage of that buyer's journey. But let's say that I was in the market for a new phone. One of the things that I might look up is best phones for 2021. From there, I might narrow it down to say, I want to consider an iPhone Pro versus a Samsung Galaxy, whatever number they're on. And I might do a comparison. After that, I'm going to be probably interested in something like cost. So I'm going to do these different levels of research on my own online. And if you can have that conversation happen on your website through the content you create, people are already there and they're not having to go to different information sources. And you become a hub of information for people who are interested in buying products or services like yours.
And so somebody arrives and consumes that information. When it's there, is it simply an article they read and they say, and then they on their own make the decision to, you know, seek out more information on the site? Or is content intentionally structured a certain way to help them move to the next step?
Yeah. So content should always be structured from the perspective of where you anticipate that person is in their journey. And the great thing that you have as someone who's creating content is you probably have a good idea of the problems that someone's experiencing or the challenge that they're up against. And if you can tie back the next thing that you're asking someone to do after reading an article, let's say, to how it's going to solve their greater problem, you have the ability to continue to educate them and to continue to keep them on your website versus them coming to your website, reading an article and saying, that was great. Now I'm going to go back to searching all the random things online that are going to distract me from what I was doing.
And is your recommendation to sort of embed that next step recommendation into the text? So it's sort of like there's a call to action at the conclusion of an article, or there are hints along the way, or is that too crass? Is that too pushy? I'm sure that there's both perspectives out there in terms of how to approach content. What's yours?
Yeah. So the way that we teach our clients is we always want to have two calls to action in a conclusion. We want to have one that's more transitional. So someone is coming here, you're going to help continue to educate them. And that's going to be the transitional one. It just incrementally moves them along without going for the kill and asking for the sale.
Okay.
And a direct call to action is always going to give someone no doubt what they can do if they're ready to reach out to you.
So, you know, I work with a lot of financial advisors, and maybe they're writing an article about how to, you know, realign your finances so that you're reducing your taxes in some way, right?
Sure.
And at the end of the article, they might want to get somebody to book a call with them to have a consultation. How would you frame that based on the two calls to action structure that you've just talked about?
So that would be that direct call to action. That is what we call like the marry me call to action.
Okay.
Versus the transitional would be like I want to go on a second date and I want you to continue to try to feel this out. So that would be one of the two that we would recommend. The second one, which we would put a higher priority on, is if they're interested in this piece of information, what's the next thing they need to be thinking about? And tie it back to their overall problem. So if they came in with a problem of trying to solve this, what's the next thing that I can do to help them continue to solve their problem? And I'm going to put most of my eggs in that basket, hoping that they will continue to engage with me because I'm continuing to help them.
And that could be either sending them to another piece of content, or it could be offering an opportunity to, I don't know, have them opt into your email list in exchange for something. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, we would typically see it to be another piece of like information that we're freely giving away without having to exchange it for an email or something like that. So another piece of content or a free resource or something that is immediately helpful to someone that's going to help take them to the next stage of being able to solve that larger problem they came in with.
So I'm curious what, and I don't have the statistics that you have from working with so many different businesses in this regard. Is there something to inform that versus trying to capture the lead as early on as possible? Are you getting better quality leads after they've consumed more content? What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah. So in They Ask You Answer, the book that Marcus wrote, he had an example where he actually had HubSpot for his website, and he could determine based on a certain number of pages, the quality of the lead. So based on that certain number of pages that someone consumed on his website, he could give a pretty good idea of how well he was actually going to be able to close that lead. Mm-hmm. And I think it was 30 to 40 pages. And if someone consumed that amount of content on his website, his conversion rate when he went to a consultation skyrocketed. If they didn't consume that, it was a hit or miss.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, that's a number that probably is specific to the type of business and the type of consumer that he was speaking to. And so it's not a universal number, which, because that was correct, a scary big number.
Yeah. Right. Which is why we really try to get people to just be educational more than anything else. And if you can answer every single hesitation that someone would have in working with you in a piece of content and continue to just educate and educate and educate, at a certain point, they're going to be like, I don't have any hesitation.
Yeah. You spoke a little bit about where people are in their buyer's journey and having content for all of the stages so that you're, I guess, speaking to them at the point that they're, you know, sort of the conversation that's going on inside their mind, mm-hmm. the famous copywriting approach. So can you give a couple of examples of sort of the type of content as it relates to where somebody might be?
Yeah. So let's take an example of a client of mine that's a packaging machinery vendor. They're someone that was very early on in their buyer's journey, might not actually understand what piece of machinery they need. They're more likely to search something like, how do I solve this problem? Or I'm experiencing this, what can I do? The goal in that article would be to educate them on what their potential solutions are. And hint, hint, one of the solutions is going to be the piece of machinery that we actually sell that can help them in that. But it's going to be nested in a bunch of solutions. Mm-hmm. But the goal there would be to educate them what we do, and not from this is what we sell, but this is a potential solution that you have. Versus if they're further down their journey and they know what type of machinery they need, maybe a comparison article that helps explain the top two vendors of that piece of machinery would be more beneficial to them, because they don't have to go so surface level in terms of their understanding of like, what does this piece of machinery do?
And interesting that you talk about the importance of a business discussing the wider landscape of their industry and maybe their competition, as opposed to just talking about their solutions. Why is that important?
Phrase that back to you in a question. If all I was doing was talking about how great I was, would you be interested in working with me?
Yeah. I knew it was a softball question, but it's an important point that I think, you know, a lot of businesses miss. There's more trust, right? There's a greater authority on the subject matter overall when you're doing that. That's at least my thoughts on it. So yeah, I totally makes sense.
I think it's also a lot of people are only talking about themselves. And this is a potential, you know, unique selling point for you as a business. If you are brave enough to kind of talk about your competition, mm-hmm. or your alternative options that could solve the same problem for you, but or maybe your indirect competitors, but they're not the ones you're up against every day. So by actually discussing the landscape, you're helping someone make the best decision for them, whether it is or is not you, which on the back end helps you, because you're not going to have to waste time with bad fit prospects. You're not going to be wasting time on sales calls that aren't going to go anywhere. So it's somewhat of a qualification thing as well. When you do step out and you start to talk about more than just yourself, because you're opening up to just the people that are actually going to be a good fit to work with you.
Makes a lot of sense. I think about it in terms of like sales copy, where you gain more trust when you're talking about the competition by talking about them in a positive light and then pointing out, but it may not be a good solution for you if, you know, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Because you're giving the reader, the consumer, the information they need without forcing them to believe that, gosh, yours is the only solution out there. And if they are a good fit, which is basically what you've just described, they're more likely to gravitate toward you and be converted in their mind before they even, you know, have a sales conversation. So that makes total sense.
So yeah, I think as well, if you even talk about your competition and say, you might actually be a good fit for them if this looks like you, what's more transparent and trustworthy than that to mm-hmm. say like, we don't need your business. We would like to do your business, but only if you're truly going to get the most out of us. Because if we do try to sell to people like that, they might have a bad experience because they weren't a good fit from the outset, which might lead them to leaving a bad review or having a negative experience, which we could have avoided the entire time.
So I want to shift gears and chat a little bit about impact and the work that you guys do there and the support that you give for businesses who are looking to put a content strategy together to, I guess, foster inbound marketing. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about you're not a traditional agency. You Correct. Are actually you have set up a business that basically makes you a non-essential vendor after you've done all the work that you do.
Yeah. So at Impact, we firmly believe that the best way for our clients to see long-term success is to not have any reliance on a third party. So for us, it is our goal to teach you, they ask you answer, how to build a content and video strategy, how to work with your sales team and make your sales team more collaborative with your marketing team within 12 to 24 months. And once we've done that, we have set you free and it is yours to take and continue to grow and iterate on without needing our help.
That's awesome. I love it. And I agree with the philosophy of empowering businesses to be better about what they're doing themselves rather than outsourcing their marketing and not having a clear sense of exactly what's going on or having the control or having the voice, right? Either. Yeah. So that makes total sense. And what types of businesses does Impact work with?
So we work with a lot of different businesses. We don't work with any like enterprise companies or any businesses that are really on the large end of things. A good amount of our business comes from local companies that have a, you know, home service business or managed service providers or some tech or SaaS companies. It's all over the place, but it's largely anybody who believes that being the most trusted voice in their space is paramount to success in beating their competition.
So I'm fixated on the thing that we were talking about earlier when it comes to the amount of content that is necessary to be developed. What for, you know, an average business, what's involved in building out that content, sort of the practical activity?
Yeah. So the first thing that we do when we work with any client is we have them hire a content manager, someone that's going to be producing content as their sole and singular role. And the goal is that we get them to write 3 articles per week as soon as possible. And that's one of many roles that you will insource. Mm-hmm. A video, like a videographer, is another one of those primary roles that you need. And we work with people on the video side as well to help them create videos that build trust and transparency as well. But it's getting the people in place. So you're insourcing, and then let's figure out how to ramp up production using your sales team and the people who are talking to prospects and customers on a daily basis as the initial driver of what we're going to talk about.
And is there a difference in the medium? So you talked about both text, articles, and you talked about video. How do you decide what's appropriate where?
It's a great question. And something that I think every company has to figure out a little bit for themselves, depending on where their audience lives. Largely, we start with content early because content historically is going to live on your website, where video content might live on a third-party platform like YouTube or Vidyard, where it might not give you immediate traffic to your website, whereas article content is always going to give you immediate traffic to your website.
And are you assuming that all of this is organic, meaning they're getting, you know, search results because somebody's typing something into Google, or are you also driving traffic with money? Are people paying for ads to get these articles promoted places?
Yeah. So I would say 90% of the work that we do with our clients at Impact is teaching them how to do this from an organic perspective. And it's great when we can look back 2 years in SEMrush, which is a marketing analytics tool, and see their organic traffic cost in excess of like $200,000, saying if you were to put your paid spend to try to rank for what we are already ranking for organically, you'd be spending $200,000 a month.
Yeah. I love that because, you know, you said one of the first things that you do is you hire some people and you're thinking that, well, where's the return on the investment of these new salaries? Well, you just explained where it is, and that makes total sense.
Yeah.
So that's great. Hey, Brian Casey, we are just about out of time. If folks are interested in finding out more about you and about Impact, where should they go?
Yeah, so impactplus.com is our website. On there, you're going to find a learning center. We have a platform that you can actually watch free training videos on. They ask, you answer, inbound marketing, all kinds of stuff. It's a great resource hub. And then for me on LinkedIn, I think in the show notes, my link might be there.
I will make sure that it is there. And on LinkedIn, you show up, I believe, as Brian P. Casey. So we'll make sure to route people in your direction. So any last words before we wrap up?
No, I thought this was great. I love the fact that you have so many shared philosophies of helping people do this for themselves, because I think at the end of the day, that's where you're going to see the most success, as someone who works in marketing or who's a business owner.
I totally agree. I've had this firsthand where, I operate out of Oregon and we have a wine country nearby, and I've had several winery clients who have said, hey, can you just have somebody do all our social media? And I'm thinking, no, because all of the interesting stuff is happening in your vineyard, in your cellar. And unless I hire an employee to live with you, right, we're not going to have great content. So it really is something that should be taken on by the businesses if they understand the benefit of it, and they have to understand how to prioritize the right things, the right time, and strategically, right? Then it's a no-brainer for them. And so that's really where we sit, where we help them understand the benefit of learning it and doing it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, excellent. Brian Casey, thank you so much for joining us. I'll make sure that folks can find you on LinkedIn, and also a link over to Impact, which is impactplus.com. Thanks for coming. And folks, thank you for spending time once again here at More Perfect Marketing. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. For a collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, please visit getdavidsgift.com. That's getdavidsgift.com. Once again, thanks for listening to More Perfect Marketing.